This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscowain. Teachers around the country are gearing up for the new school year. Here in Philadelphia, there is uncertainty because of a financial crisis facing the school district. There's a battle between the state, city council, and the mayor about how to make up a serious budget shortfall. In June, several thousand teachers, secretaries, counselors, assistant principals, and other staffers were laid off. Some have been hired back, but not all. Superintendent William Height had said he may delay the opening of the schools if he doesn't get at least $50 million by tomorrow. And as we just heard on WHYY, Mayor Michael Nutter has announced that these schools will get their $50 million. Well, we wanted to talk with some teachers about what it's like to work in Philadelphia's public schools, and two of them join us today on Radio Times. John Coates attended the M.H. Stanton Elementary School and had worked there for 27 years as a teacher and dean of students. The school was closed in June and just found out that he was reassigned to Emlyn School. And John Coates, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Also with us is Hillary Leonardopoulos, and she's a third grade teacher at Julia de Burgos Elementary School that's in West Kensington. She's been teaching for 10 years. She writes for Huffington Post and the Philadelphia Inquirer. And Hillary, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well. So are you ready for this new school year, Hillary?
Of course.
And what does that mean to be ready for you?
Well, it means something definitely different this year because we don't really know what our classrooms and what our schools are going to look like in September. And, you know, a lot of times people ask me, well, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen if? Well, this situation that we're in right now is simply unprecedented. We're clearly in an untenable situation. We keep hearing that. So we really have no idea what it is to be ready. So I say, of course, because teachers are usually ready for any circumstances thrown their way. Absolutely. But really ready? I don't know.
What about for you, John? And as I said, you just heard yesterday about your reassignment.
Yes,
what does that mean for you?
Well, it's a little baffling because I'm walking into a blind situation, whereas before, for 27 years, I knew exactly what I was walking into. I was well prepared. I am about as prepared as I can be. I haven't met the new principal yet, haven't met my new students yet, but it's just a joy just to have a job and to be working.
Do you know what grades you'll be teaching, or, I mean, do you know anything else besides the fact that you just got reassigned to the school?
Well, I was told yesterday that I have a grade assignment, which is the grade assignment range from K through 5, so I'm unsure of exactly what type of classroom I will have.
So you haven't seen your classroom?
No, I haven't. And that's a problem because normally by this time I've actually set up my classroom in preparation for my students, and I've met with some of my parents so that we have an understanding before the school year began.
Hillary, you wrote about the layoffs and how it affected your particular school,
right?
The numbers of people, individuals,
right,
who were laid off and what they did and what they meant to the school.
Right. I think that a lot of times faces seem to get lost in the crowd, and the experiences of the people living in these schools each and every day, because they're our second home. I mean, my students are my family. My coworkers are my family. I call my school, the de Burgos Familia, family in Spanish. And that's how I address emails to them. And we really are a family. And we a lot of times hear the numbers, 38, 72. I don't even know what it turned out to be in the final number. But those are actual people, like Sunny Velez, our secretary, who you can count on her for anything in the school. And you will ask somebody a question, and the answer is usually, I don't know, did you check with Sunny?
Hmm.
Oh, no, good point. And then you call Sunny. Sunny, I need this. Okay, I'll get it for you in 5 minutes. And she's always cheerful. And we used to have two secretaries. We had one last year. Sunny is still laid off. But she made it work with being the only secretary there. You should have seen her desk, but she won't be very happy for me saying that. But,
but
you
it
know,
worked.
It
worked.
She made it work. She had to.
So do you know if any of those people that were laid off have been hired back or where they landed or ended up?
Nope. Not one person that I know has been called back. I know that there has been some discussion of some of the secretaries laid off, but because Sunny is a more senior secretary, she has not been called back. So she is still without a job. And she wrote to me. She said, I couldn't go to this event last week, this rally, because I hurt my knee and I don't have any medical insurance. So she said, so I'm sitting here at home with this knee. I can't walk more than, 10 yards without it, excruciating pain, but I can't go to the doctor.
John, you've been working for the Philadelphia school system for 27 years now. And there have been, issues, if I can say that, in the past. Is there anything like what the school district and teachers like yourself are dealing with today?
Nothing in this fashion or to this magnitude. In my 27 years with the district, we have never gone through the conniptions and the flips that we're going through now. And this is something by design, and I think that has been it's a systematic failure of the students in Philadelphia. And my outrage is no one in the city, as far as the officials, has ever stood up and challenged the district, and no one in the state has ever challenged the city controller, because they're the ones in control of the spending in our school system. How did it get this bad? Since 2002, when they took over, it has gotten ridiculous, but no one has ever challenged any of those officials who are responsible as being the watchdogs and brought them to the table to address the issues. What they've done is they turned the blame and put it on the teachers. We're at the bottom of the pay scale, and they want to take from us to build up a school that they're not supporting themselves.
But when you say by design, mm-hmm. I mean, you think people want to dismantle the Philadelphia Public School System?
But of course. I think the real attack is against the students, and the real attack is against the unions across the nation. And I think people need to realize that the unions is what built this nation, and the unions is what this nation stands upon. And when they attack the unions, they are not just attacking employees, they're attacking the students and the families and the communities that are connected to the unions.
And Hillary, people want unions, the teachers union, to give back.
Right. And I couldn't agree with John more when he said that this crisis was created. This is a manufactured crisis that we are in right now. We have been saying the same thing since the state took over the school district in 2001. We have been saying this is not working. This is the road to privatization of public education. This is not what students need to succeed. Charter growth has gone unheeded for years. You know, there's been a stoppage of that this year, although four new schools were turned around, so I would question that. But regardless, our students aren't leaving to go to other cities. They're not leaving to go to private schools. They're leaving to go to charter schools, because of a misconstrued notion mm-hmm. that charter schools are better. So this happened, and now we're here, and we're being asked for concessions, and we're being made to look selfish, but we've been saying this over and over.
And what are the concessions being asked for, John? And we should say the contract is up. What the
sure.
deadline is August 31st.
Sure.
What's being asked?
What I understand and what I'm being asked to give is 26% of my salary. If I'm at the bottom of the pay scale across the country and you're asking me to give 26% of my salary, that's ridiculous. How's my family supposed to survive? And you won't fund and support my classroom, but you want 26% of my salary and you want me to do more with less. That's unbelievable. 13% of my salary based on my years of experience and 13% of my salary based on the fact that I have my family covered under my health care. That's ridiculous. I'm going to borrow Mike Tyson's words. That's ludicrous.
Go ahead, Hillary.
I mean, you're absolutely right, John. This whole crisis has been so finely manufactured that we're here, and we the teachers and the paraprofessionals and the secretaries are being made to look selfish mm-hmm. as if we are. We keep hearing that reference, the three-legged stool. You know, the city, the state, and the PFT. I don't understand how we are the third leg of that
Correct.
Stool. Since when is my salary, my teacher's salary, which is 19% less than my suburban counterparts, since when is that a funding source?
Right.
And I can tell you very clearly that next year, the several thousand dollars a year that I spend on my classroom, that will not be feasible.
Hmm.
That will simply not be feasible. We have been subsidizing Philadelphia education for years because we want to, because we are trying to make it work.
Yes.
I teach in West Kensington because I want to teach in West Kensington. It's not a sacrifice to me because it's what I love to do. However, in some sense, it is a sacrifice
mm-hmm.
because I could work in the suburbs
mm-hmm.
and I could make a lot more money
mm-hmm.
and I could have all these extra resources, and I don't. But this is where my students need me most, and that's where I want to be.
And you say you're typical of most teachers in the school district in that they use their personal money to help supply their classroom.
Absolutely. I mean, things from textbooks. I, you know, last year bought Spanish math journals for my students because it wasn't in the budget, and I had about five students that simply could not follow the curriculum at all, so I bought them the Spanish math journals from the school supply company, from the actual publisher. So it's things like that, but it's also things like extra socks, extra underwear,
mm-hmm.
extra winter coats, personal hygiene supplies, all these things, and it's not anything that I am asking for praise for, but
mm-hmm.
it's just the reality, and it's just, you know, to be made to look for us to be made look selfish and greedy and not wanting to give things up, it's so insulting that it's hard to even find the words to describe it. I mean, it's just very insulting.
Well, and I should say to our listeners, I'm doing a little research on both of your schools. The school that you just was just closed, Stanton, most of the children there at low income or
sure.
a poverty level, same with Julia de Burgos. So we're talking about poor kids attending schools without the supplies that they need.
So, I mean, let's look at that. Let's look at the, when we talk about research, let's look at research. Stanton Elementary School, in its infancy, was a blooming and progressing school. Why? Because we had the supplies and we had the available resources available to support children, teachers, family, and community. As we were doing well, the district decided to take all of that from us and strip us. They took the NTAs out of the building. That was the first thing.
What's an NTA?
An NTA is non-teaching assistant.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And actually, they walk the halls. They manage the hallways. They manage the yard. They manage the supplies. And they assist teachers when we need support. So in taking that, the crime has risen in the schools. Let's just say, when I say crime, not just the students. I don't want to put this on the students. Well, let's put it on the adults where it belongs. The doors are unguarded. And there are many doors into a building. So they robbed us of all of our supplies and all of our resources. And then they expect us to do more with little.
And you're talking about people coming in and actually robbing the supply closet.
I'm talking about people. Yeah, the people that came in and actually robbed the supply closet would be the district.
It would be the district itself.
Yes.
So have you over years used your own personal finances to help?
Every teacher across this city that works with the city of Philadelphia, we use our personal earnings to support and undergird our children. Not only to undergird our children, I'd say that there would be families, and I wish they would call and tell you that we have supported families who are in need, whether it's financial need, whether to pay this bill, that bill, and not to put anybody under the bus, but yes, families come in and they say that we have a need. Our job is more than just to educate that child. Our job is to educate that community. So we give more than we give to our own families.
We're almost up on a break here, Hillary, but I'm wondering about the students and their families, whether they're feeling some of the uncertainty because of this financial crisis.
Absolutely. I mean, any parent I talk to is fully in support of their teachers, their secretaries, their school support staff, and they keep. I've had so many parents say to me, "But Mrs. L, that's crazy. How are they going to do that to you?" And I say, "It's not doing it to me. This is doing it to us. This is doing it to this community in Philadelphia. We are being set up to fail. I mean, there is no way. There is absolutely no way that a school can function as it's being set up to function next year.
Correct.
It's not going to happen."
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Hillary Leonardopoulos, and she's a third-grade teacher at Julia de Burgos Elementary School. That's in West Kensington. She's been teaching there for a decade now. Also with us, John Coates. He had worked for 27 years at the M.H. Stanton Elementary School. The school was closed. He was just reassigned yesterday to Emlyn School. And we have Susan Lee, who will be joining us after this very short break. She teaches at Academy of Palumbo. And we're taking calls. We want to hear from teachers and parents here in Philadelphia. 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
The WHYY Connections Festival is back with a day of free live music featuring They Might Be Giants, Ben Queller, and more. Saturday, September 7th at the Great Plaza at Penn's Landing. The WHYY Connections Festival is free for everyone, and WHYY members and sustainers get exclusive access to the member Oasis tent all day long. They Might Be Giants and more Saturday, September 7th at the Great Plaza. For a full lineup and to register, visit whyy.org/connectionsfestival.
Can genetically modified crops contaminate your cooking compost? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll look at whether the inclusion of frankenfoods can blemish your black gold to be, plus answers to an especially large selection of your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, it's been a staple of summer since James Dean lit up the screen. We'll look at teen romance films, including The Spectacular Now.
You wouldn't know who I am.
I'm Amy.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing, now talking with three Philadelphia public school teachers about the current state of affairs in Philadelphia, some of the challenges and rewards of their work in the classroom. And joining us is Susan Lee. She's been an 11th grade math teacher at the Academy of Palermo since 2009. That was after graduating from Temple University. And this year she received the District Teacher of the Year Award. And Susan Lee, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Staying with us, Hillary Leonardopoulos, third grade teacher at Julio de Burgos Elementary School, and John Coates was at Stanton Elementary School for 27 years. The school closed in June, and now he has been reassigned to Emlyn. And we do want to hear from teachers, parents in Philadelphia. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Susan, I was talking to John and Hillary about how they were preparing for the new school year with some degree of uncertainty. Some of this money issue, at least from the city, might be settled, but nonetheless, do you feel ready for your students?
Honestly, I feel very, very nervous. I've been talking to my coworkers a lot lately. Our biggest concern is the counselors. We lost all of our counselors, and we're a high school, so there's no way we can run without a counselor. We need at least one because of college applications. Academy at Palumbo is a magnet school.
That's right, I was going to say.
Most of our graduation rate has been 97% and up every year, and most of our students attend 2 to 4 year colleges. So we need counselors there to help them prepare for that application process and the fee waivers and SAT and all of that. And even if we get a counselor back, even if we get two back, we really want our own counselors back. They've been with us for a long time, and building those relationships with students is incredibly important.
Well, let me pick up on that, because and I'll toss this to you, John, but also to you, Hillary, about when there's all this sort of chaos and disruption, it does raise questions about the relationship that students have with their school, with their teachers, with counselors.
Absolutely. One of the biggest things that we had at Stanton was we had a parent and staff community that actually we were a family. And every teacher treated their classroom as if it were a family. And it makes a whole lot more sense to have a family unit working together, because you can get more out of your students. They know them. You have a good rapport with them. You could get so much more. And now we're thrusting kids into a situation where they're going to areas that are, we know that the city is transit, but we thrust them into areas where they're turf. So we're putting kids in the areas where there are turf wars. And so now I expect, if they report it correctly, that the violence is going to increase. And the focus is going to be more on managing your classroom versus educating your students. And that's a travesty.
And where are the kids from Stanton going? Are they going to
a half a mile down the street to Duckery Elementary School.
And you're worried about that half-mile walk?
I'm worried about that. Not only the half-mile walk, I'm worried about the fact that when we had our meetings with the SRC, there were words exchanged from people in the community that live there that pretty much said that they didn't want our students there. And that's disheartening.
And we're talking about elementary school students.
That's correct.
We're talking about
babies. And the answer was that the new school police chief said that she's going to have more crossing guards at Broad Street. Well, that's not the route that we take. Mm-hmm. And why would you send a baby to Broad Street, a major highway, mm-hmm. to go half a mile to a school?
Is your school going to be increased? Are you going to have more students?
Yes. So I have the reverse situation of John. We are receiving students from the closing Fairhill Elementary. So we're getting about 300 new students next year, grades K to 8. And we really just – we don't know what that's going to look like. It is – we are – of course – we'll welcome the students with open arms. They didn't create this situation. Of course, we will do everything in our power to – you know, join them into our family. Like John said, we are families in these schools. But at the same time, how much of that is going to be feasible when there's 30-some students in a class? De Burgos was part of the reduced class size model implemented in the district, I want to say maybe 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you that last year, maybe 2 years ago, excuse me, I had a class of 19 students.
Wow.
And it's highly unusual. But it was one of the most amazing and incredible years of my teaching career. And it was absolutely, we got so many things done. And we had such close relationships. And I still miss those kids every single day that I don't see them. Just because the relationships were allowed to develop so much further. And when we are now going to be, and we were part of a reduced class size model because we needed to be,
right.
because our students needed extra resources. We have a very high ELL population, a fairly high special education population. 30-some students with many different needs, behavioral needs as well, that does not work in a classroom.
Right. Is that what you're going to get come September, do you think?
That's what we expect, yes, absolutely.
How about for you? And you're a magnet school, so slightly different situation here, but how big are your classes?
So my class is the same thing. About a couple years ago, I had one class of about 23, which was a dream.
Yes,
but now it's been last year, three out of my five classes were completely maxed out, 33, a maximum number of students in a classroom. So this year, even though we are a magnet school, we're still growing, so they expect us to take a lot more. And it kind of messes us up a bit, because we don't know if they're going to say, all right, here's 50 more that you just have to take. And the kids, their ability levels are going to start spreading out more and more. And that's going to be a big challenge for us. And we realized last year, when we kept asking the district for we needed more teachers, and they told us that the ratio is fine, like it's 33-1, and we realized they were counting our librarian and our special education teacher as just full-time teachers. And so we actually had our librarian and our special education teacher teach an additional English class, an additional elective. So now they're trying to do teaching while they're trying to do their own job at the same time.
And do you have enough supplies? We were talking with John and Hillary about, you know, forking out, as I said, you know, we're happy to do it, but having to use some of your own personal money to buy supplies for the classroom.
Right. I make sure I keep all my receipts and file it in my tax return. But yes, we get that.
Good for you.
Right.
Good for you.
We get that $100 a year, but I easily spend $150 just for the first week of school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of scrape by in my classroom. I sell pencils and notebooks, and kids who can afford them, they'll buy them, and then kids who can't afford them, I'll just on the side just hand it to them, and so that they have it. People ask about calculators, if we have enough graphing calculators, do we have classroom sets? We have about 20 for the whole school. So on the calculators, graphing calculators.
Okay.
For smaller calculators, we have base calculators, we have about maybe 30. So when it comes to standardized test days, it's kind of chaotic. We're trying to convince the kids to go get one from somebody else, borrow one, because there's just not enough.
What do you like about teaching? And clearly all three of you do, but what do you like about teaching, Hillary?
I look at it as just an opportunity to show my students what they're capable of. And it's not me up there making a demonstration and saying, if you do this, you'll be able to do X, Y, and Z. But it's a process of bringing out in themselves their true character and their true passions and desires and abilities, and making them believe, because I believe, that they are capable of anything. And I always tell them, guys, I wouldn't tell you this if I didn't mean it. You know, it's not a song and dance for me. I truly believe that any single one of my students could do anything they wanted.
And John, you've been teaching or in the school system for 27 years. What keeps you there?
The kids. Just the love and the passion I have to see kids prosper and progress despite what the hand that they've been dealt in life. That means so much to me, to see that they can make it. You know, you have a kid where you tell them that you can do it when they've been beat down for so long by society. And I'm talking elementary school kids, even kindergartners.
Yep.
They know they've been beat down. And when they have someone who really cares and see them perform, oh, my God, it just brings tears to your eyes. I'm getting emotional now.
Yeah, I am too. Watching you get emotional.
It brings tears to your eyes.
How about for you, Susan? Then we'll get some callers in.
You've been agreeing with both of them. Yes, the kids, absolutely. There's no other reason why I would be there. I mean, I heard earlier about how, you know, people, I feel like it's kind of insulting when some people say to me, I hear what's going on in a district. So, you know, are there any jobs in the suburbs? Are there any jobs in the charter schools where you can go? And I said, that's not the point. Like, that's not why I'm upset. It's not because even the salary cut or the benefits, I'll figure out a way. It's just that, but the kids, they're just kids. Like, what are they supposed to do? Where are they supposed to go? And so when I build that rapport with my students, and when it finally clicks to them that there is at least one adult out there that who really cares, that during that time that they have with me in my classroom, that they are safe and that they are cared for, and that they can do more than what people in their neighborhood say, what people in the district say to them.
That's Susan Lee. She's an 11th grade math teacher at the Academy of Palumbo. She received the district's Teacher of the Year award this year. Also with us, Hillary Linadopoulos, and she's a third grade teacher at Burgos Elementary School. That's in West Kensington. She's been teaching for 10 years, and sometimes her writing appears in Huffington Post and the Philadelphia Inquirer. Also with us, John Coates. He had spent 27 years as a teacher and then dean of students at Stanton Elementary School. The school was closed in June. He's now been reassigned to Emlyn, and he attended Stanton School as well. And as we all know, some serious issues and challenges and financial crises here in Philadelphia having to do with schools and school students. And that's why we invited these three teachers to join us on Radio Times. Let's see what some of our callers say. And as I said, we're particularly interested in hearing from other Philadelphia teachers and parents who send their children to school in Philadelphia as well. Let me get to Ronald from North Philadelphia to join us. Ronald, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, my name is Ronald, and I'm from Mary Vicente Academy Charter School.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed a big difference with charter schools and public schools. I recently went to a public school, like, a few years ago, and my grades were horrible. And when I transferred to a charter school, my grades improved so much. Now, the difference is, the teachers do not have control in public schools. They do not have control. The students, like, take control, full control of the classroom.
Well, let me ask you a quick question, then we'll get a response from our guest here. Ronald, what public school did you go to?
I went to Hardin Warren G. Middle School, and then I transferred to Mary Bassetti Academy Charter School.
Okay, fair enough. And from his perspective, I'll toss this to you, John, feeling that from his experience, teachers not enough in control of the classroom.
Well, first of all, I'd like to congratulate Ronald on his growth and improvement. But I can't take the blame, and I will not accept any blame for any teachers. When we say not able to handle the classroom, there are a lot of other factors that take place. There are rules and regulations where teachers are, our hands are tied as well, as far as what we can and cannot do in the classroom. Our primary goal and objective is to educate children, but if the entire time you sit and you're managing your classroom, why is that the teacher's fault? When does the administration step in and say that something is going awry and I need to offer some assistance? So, but not to sit here and point the finger, I've had opportunities to engage in. I'm an engaging person, like I think the two ladies at the table are as well. When we see something happen, when we perceive or we hear because we have a good rapport with our students, we engage ourselves to be preventive and proactive to keep it from happening. I can tell you this, in my 27 years, kids don't run out of my classroom. Why is that? Because they know that I love and care for them, and they know that they're not allowed.
And they're not allowed as well. What's the role of a principal, from your perspective, Hillary, in terms of creating a certain kind of atmosphere in a school?
Well, I think that it's something that it doesn't start at the top. I think that the principal is absolutely instrumental in promoting a healthy environment in the school. But what I would actually argue is that it sort of is a ground-up thing. It's about, well, what's the teacher next to you doing? You know, I notice that I have this student and Mr. Coates is next door to me, and that child goes over to him and sits like perfect angel. So, Mr. Coates, let's talk. Can you meet with me during my prep and give me some strategies? Because, you know, I'm pulling my hair out with this child. It's about forging those kind of relationships and creating a community in the school. And I think that the discussion of the charter is better than the public is just simply a very, very unhealthy one to have. I really think that it doesn't, it's just so, it's so unproductive.
Anything you want to add to that, Susan? Then we'll get back to our callers.
Yes, I feel very strongly about that type of statement. I actually have a few friends who teach at charters, and it is a completely different world. One of the charter schools, for example, I know that the administration handles all the relationships with the parents. The teachers do not talk to the parents at all. So any complaints, including behavioral issues, if there's a behavior issue in the classroom, the student's automatically sent to administration and they deal with it. So it's only the teachers focus on content. So when you have, but it's very almost militant, it's so structured and separated that, you know, in that type of environment, it's totally different. In a public school, that's completely unheard of.
And even in a magnet school, do you have to deal with behavior issues or behavior problems?
Absolutely. I mean, we have our own issues, even though we're a magnet school, but it all goes back to needing those counselors to kind of form that liaison and getting the parents together and starting that conversation.
Let me see what Kate from Fairmont has to say. And Kate, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi. My name is Kate, and I'm calling from Fairmount. I am a school teacher at the Martin Luther King High School in West Oak Lane, right out of Germantown. And, you know, we're merging with Germantown High School, and that's a huge rival for years and years and years. And I just wanted to comment that, you know, they have cut all but one principal. We had five assistant principals last year. We now have none. They have cut all of our deans, which are controlled for controlling climate control and are always in classrooms. And it's a huge problem. And as our school grows and as our special ed population grows, we're above 30% now. You know, they're just cutting support staff, which is only going to increase problems within the building. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Kate, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And I hear a theme from our caller and also the three of you. Hillary, I'm looking at you about the importance of these support staff.
Absolutely. There was a fascinating article in the New York Times maybe two Sundays ago about the football teams at Martin Luther King High. So I'm glad that Kate called. It was sort of how this merger is going to look through the eyes of this football team, which it's not exactly clear is going to be entirely funded. And you see how you read this article and you think, oh my gosh, this is so essential to these students' lives. This sport provides them with something that a literature class is not going to provide them. And will they continue to take literature classes? Absolutely. Of course, they're essential. However, these support staff, and I want to say that the teacher, the coach was volunteering, or he wasn't sure if he was going to be paid, and that's typical. Mm. And it's typical heroism, I would say, but it is quite typical. I think most school district teachers in that situation would do the same thing. But seeing that plight through the eyes of those football players and seeing the photographs, it's terrifying.
John, she had mentioned Dean, and you had been Dean of Students at Stanton. And I guess Dean is that person who roams the halls and talks to students and troubleshoots when
Absolutely.
Things come up.
Absolutely. Not only just the students, but the parents. When the parents have issues, you're the first line of defense. A lot of times, as the other people have just said at the table was, we have to, as a dean, you have to meet with the parents, you have to meet with the students first thing in the morning, you have to secure the building, even though you have a security officer, you have to walk the halls, but you also have to provide proper education for those kids who are taken out of the classroom. So any kid that I get during the daytime, I have to make sure that they have the academics presented to them in a fashion that they would understand it and comprehend it.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's John Coates, and as I said, a 27-year veteran staff member at M.H. Stanton Elementary School here in Philadelphia, worked as a school teacher, classroom teacher, and also as dean of students. So the school was closed in June, the students merging with another school. He has been reassigned to Emlyn School, just found out yesterday about that. Also with us, Susan Lee. She's been an 11th grade math teacher at the Academy of Palumbo. That's a magnet school here in Philadelphia. This year, she received the district's Teacher of the Year award. And Hillary Leonardopoulos is a third grade teacher at Burgos Elementary School in West Kensington. She's been teaching for 10 years. And again, we'll get back to our callers after this very short break. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. Alzheimer's is not curable, but prescription medications can sometimes help to maintain the quality of life for longer periods. Keystone Clinical Studies of Norristown is conducting a research study to test a new investigational medication for patients with a diagnosis of mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. 610-277-8073. 610-277-8073 or KeystoneClinicalStudies.com. Keystone Clinical Studies supports WHYY.
What's going on in your brain while you sleep, and how can you make sure you get the sleep you need? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with neuroscientist Penelope Lewis, author of The Secret World of Sleep. She runs the Sleep and Memory Lab at the University of Manchester in England. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Thank you. Raids on pro-Morsi supporters in Cairo mark one of the bloodiest days in Egypt since the uprisings began.
It was the closest thing I've ever seen to a war zone. You've still got thousands of people in there determined to hold their ground.
A country deeply divided with an unclear roadmap for the future. Next time on The Takeaway from Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Let's get back to our callers. Looks like we have Daniel from Spring Garden Street. Daniel, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm a parent of an incoming senior at Central High School.
Sure.
And the Central High School has a 3,000-plus student load. And at Central, just for example, there will be no nurses. There will be no counselors. No counselors. I see it taking a toll already in my daughter's, in my daughter and her friends. The kids are freaking out. They're not going to know how to prepare for college as far as counselor help goes. We know that schools such as Greenfield have reached out to, parents for financial donations. We know that, some of the alumni at Central have been asked to foot the bill for things to bridge gaps. You will also have no nurses. And think about that. No nurses for 3,000 students at a school like Central. Now, Central is the number two school in academically in the city. Now, we know also that Masterman, that Mayor Nutter's daughter went to Masterman and had all the privileges of college counselors, and there's a group of parents that are preparing a class action lawsuit against the city and the state to get the same privilege and same right that Mayor Nutter's daughter had at Masterman. We know who she is, we know who her teachers are, we know some of the trouble she had there.
Daniel, let me just stop you there because I don't want to be talking about students on the air and what we do or don't know about their performance in school. But I think you raise an interesting point and using Central as an example. And Susan, I'm back at you because Magnet, in certain ways, probably shares some similarities with Central. No nurses. I mean, we keep coming back to this same theme.
Right. Academy of Pombo was founded in 2006, and it was actually created to be a smaller version of Central. So I can completely understand where he's coming from. It doesn't matter if you're a magnet school or neighborhood school, but it's not having the counselors, not having nurses, you know, they're still human beings. They're still going to get sick. And this past year, I mean, the past couple of years, we had a nurse 4 days a week, then 3 days, and this past year was 2 days a week. And when my kids would say, is a nurse here today? And it's like, is it Monday or Wednesday? Because if not, you know, you're just going to have to go sit in the office and hopefully your parents will let you have an aspirin. I mean, that was the best that we could do. And it's a shame. And same thing with the counselors. It's impossible to have, to not have a counselor in a high school, especially. And with just the logistically, not just the support and the mental health, but I have students who, you know, you think you're in a magnet school, and so the kids must know the whole process. They must know what's going on, but really they don't. And so I have kids coming up to me since I'm 11th grade teacher, and kids are starting to think about the SAT and starting to think about college, and they have absolutely no clue where to go, no idea how to sign up for the SAT, no idea how to even start the search. They just think that, I guess I'll just go to Temple or Drexel since they're around the corner.
Let me go to you, Hillary, and actually to you, John, as well. And Burgos has been called, I know you don't like this, but it has been called a low-achieving school. This is a school that you've been teaching for 10 years.
Correct.
What don't you like about that?
Well, it's a flawed label. It's based on PSSA, the Pennsylvania Standardized Assessment. It's based on those scores. Now, what the rhetoric is that if the teacher says, if the school says that those scores are not reflective of the school, of what's actually taking place in the school community, it's looked upon as an excuse. But last year, my classroom was, I think, 28 students, I want to say, and half of those students were either English language learners or special education students. Now, a student who is special education Can he or she learn? Absolutely. A special education student could be the next, the next great musician, the next great mathematician. But there are limitations in terms of what a student with a pre-kindergarten reading level in third grade can do on a third grade assessment. And the English language learners, it's the same thing. Once you're in the country 366 days, you take the test in English. You can take the math in Spanish, but of course they haven't been taught math in Spanish, they've been taught in English. But the literacy, take it in English. So you've been in this country 366 days. You've made tremendous progress. You've learned how to read a Dr. Seuss book to the class, you know, and that's an actual story, which is very heartwarming to me.
I read that story.
But you have made so many gains, and I can tell you before that student takes the test that there is no way that he or she would get proficient or advanced on that exam. And so their year is then looked upon as a failure. So with a high population of special education students, of English language learners, of close to 100% of our students living in poverty, these things affect the bubble test, which is used to grade our school.
And the bubble test is filling in those little bubbles,
in the bubbles.
You're sort of half grimacing, half smiling there, John. Go ahead, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Thank you. I agree completely with what my colleague said here. Is bottom line, they're manufactured labels. I don't like them. I say to anyone in the district, you want to see real teaching, real learning, come into the classrooms and don't just sit there. Engage yourselves. I know for just a brief story, 30 seconds, I have a special ed student who was in the eighth grade where he just couldn't function in his classroom. So I was assigned to him, or he was assigned to me every day in the morning. This kid may not have been able to perform proficient or advanced on the state test, but he could do things with his hands, with a computer, and with models that were unbelievable, that would get him a job in some Ford corporation, some major corporation. But no one will ever look at him for that because they labeled him a failure because he can't pass the state test. So I think they manufacture labels, and I think they need to be removed.
Let me get George from Fox Chase to join our conversation. George, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. I actually just wanted to piggyback on what Hillary just said. I was a teacher at Edison for a few years, and I was a failing teacher then. I transferred to Central, and now magically I'm a successful teacher. So these labels, they're exactly what your guests were saying before. And it's really, a lot of studies have shown that it's poverty that is the number one indicator of a child's chance of succeeding. But what this corporate education reform model has done is they're basically saying, let's blame the teachers. It's easier to blame them than to address the societal inequities that we have, these financial inequities that are leading our schools to failure, and you're having this division in society between the haves and the have-nots. But let's blame the teachers. It's easier. Let's take away seniority. Somehow that's going to solve the problem. It's not going to solve anything.
Well, George, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and since he directed your question to you, Hillary, but do you think we're really talking about poverty here when we're talking about the struggles that so many children in Philadelphia have?
I think that it's a huge element of the picture. And it's interesting that he taught at Edison because DeBurgos feeds into Edison. So we're in the exact same community facing this same issues and, teaching the same students. I think that there are so many factors that contribute to a child's success or a child's failure. And I think sometimes we just have these preconceived notions of what a child's success looks like. Kind of getting back to the test score issue is we are required. So if a student has an IEP, an individualized education plan, because he or she is special education, there are certain elements that are required to be certain supports that a student is required to have during the school year, during everyday instruction. For example, let's say they're doing a math problem. They may be, by law, this is a legal document, the recommendation for the student might be to have manipulatives so that they do math problems with, little colored teddy bears and sort the groups, and they can do division that way. That's not allowed on the PSSA. So all these accommodations that we provide our students, and same thing with our ELL students, they're entitled to all sorts of extra services by law. And then they take the state test, And those services are just, you know, the tablecloth is just ripped out from under them, and there's a huge disconnect. So, yes, I would say that poverty is a huge part of it, but also these issues of just this testing inequity that's just so mind-boggling.
Let me get to Robin from Germantown to join our conversation. Robin, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi there. I work for the school district also. I've been in the district for 19 years as health and phys ed, and I have similar many anecdotes with everything that your readers or your callers are bringing up. But particularly, I worked at Simon Gratz High School, which was turned into a charter. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, we had an administration that would not allow us to touch the cell phone of a kid. We couldn't take a cell phone out of their hands. We couldn't prevent them from texting, yet every morning on the announcement, you may not use telephonic devices. We were not allowed to touch them. Well, I live in Germantown, and I work in the neighborhood school. So after we became a charter and I moved to the elementary school in my neighborhood, I see a lot of my high school students walking down the street. Some of them still go to Mastery. And I saw one boy one day, and I said, Stephen, hey, how's it going at Mastery? And he's like, oh, it's much better, Miss Lowry. And I was like, really, why? And he said, oh, they don't play around. I said, what do you mean? He says, oh, everybody's in class, everybody listens. I said, what about your cell phones? Oh, they take them, and they need it. If you have a cell phone, they'll keep it for a month. Well, going back to someone on your...
Sure, that was what John was talking about.
Being set up to fail, we told the whole grad diaspora, we feel set up to have failed, and we did fail because it was stacked against us. So, and then, of course, test scores plummet. You know, we brought the scores down to an 8% proficiency, yet 5 years earlier we had a principal call numbers and our proficiency rates were at like 24%. They thought it was a miracle. Then we got a new administration. Our test scores plummet. They give it to Mastery. Mastery brings it from an 8% to a 17%. They look like geniuses. I mean...
No, here, Robin, I appreciate the call. I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and I guess, John, you want to respond to her comments, and you as well.
Sure, thank you, because our students used to feed into Gratz High School, and what she says is so true. One of my responsibilities as dean when I first took that position was to collect the cell phones in the morning, and because we know what can happen, how kids will actually videotape fights or videotape the teacher and do things, so that was one of the responsibilities. What she says is so true, and it's just disheartening how that we're still trying to compare apples and oranges. Because there are things that they can do that we cannot do.
What are your thoughts, Susan?
Well, with the cell phone issue, I mean, we are told the same thing. We are not allowed to take it from them. We're not allowed to touch them. But we kind of, in our school, we put in a system to kind of work with that and around it, kind of. So what we would do is if there's a disturbance in the classroom because of a cell phone, the dean has trained the teachers that you don't confront the student, don't go through a power struggle, just send them to the dean's office. The dean will kind of de-escalate the situation and work it out and put in the proper consequences for it. So, but right, when our hands are tied and they tell us we can't do certain things and then the kids act out and then it's suddenly it's our fault.
Robin, thanks for the call. Let me see what Daniel from, looks like Mount Airy has to say. Daniel, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks.
You're welcome.
I wanted to just sort of springboard off of what was said earlier regarding the issue with charter schools. And I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. I'm a teacher at Northeast High School, by the way, and I don't think people in Philadelphia or even nationwide really understand the whole concept of the charter school. They are allowed to pick and choose their kids. We are not. So, for instance, if a child goes to a charter school, the money that would go to the public schools goes with that kid to the charter school. If that child does not perform the way they want them to perform, or if they become a behavior problem, that charter school has the right then to throw that child out, and that child will then go back to the public school, and we will be left to deal with that child. So this kind of feeds into the whole thing of why so many people think the public schools are out of control and the charter schools are so much better.
Well, Daniel, and only because we're almost out of time here, and you raise an interesting point, and I want to give our guests a chance to respond, and thanks for calling into Radio Times. Hillary, can I toss that back to you?
Sure. I mean, I think that we're just at a very, I mentioned this before, a very unhealthy place discussing the charter versus public. charter schools are supposed to function like public schools because they are public schools. Mm-hmm. Now, there are different classifications of charter schools, just like there's different classifications of traditional public schools. You know, Palumbo is a magnet school, but it's a public school. There are different requirements, and there are places for schools like Palumbo and Central and special admit schools. Absolutely. What there isn't a place for is this ridiculous division that has taken place. There's a place for charter schools in our system, of course. Certain charter schools might be, you know, musically based or, you know, arts based, but what there's not a place for is turning a neighborhood school into a charter school because somehow you flip its name and you take away some students so the classes are smaller, you kind of coach some behavior issue students out of the school, and all of a sudden it's a magically better school. So it's again, manufactured.
Well, and we're almost out of time here. If I can perhaps toss this to you, John, then, so what would improve the schools? What would make them better for teachers and for students?
The number one thing is to get your counselors, your nurses, and your NTAs back into your buildings, and then turn your schools into community schools where it make the community more responsible, more accountable for what's going on in the schools.
And for you?
Absolutely. I agree with everything that he's saying. The support staff, you know, people don't think about them because they're in that back burner, but they are the foundation. Without them, the school would completely fall apart. We wouldn't even get close to doing our jobs in our classrooms. And that community aspect is, I feel like we don't put enough emphasis on that. The support of the community is what we really need.
Well, on that note, my thanks to all three of you for joining us. My thanks as well for being teachers. Our guests have been Susan Lee, Hillary Leonardopoulos, and John Coates. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Builder with Emily Bryant. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for those phone calls as well.